What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Guys, we're getting very close to UFC 300, and coming up on today's program, I'm going to talk about the fight that every one of you is dying to see, and that's Gaethje versus Holloway. Plus, Michael Bisping shared some thoughts on Cosmet Chimaev. Charles Oliveira has pulled a Sandhagen, and Ronda Rousey has made some more comments that I want to get into starting right now. Ronda Rousey put out a book, and I would encourage you to get it. If that's a plug and like would make me nice to go and help, then I do want to do that. I must tell you, I had very big things myself that were also for sale, and Ronda never once helped me in any fashion to get the word out, and I consider her a friend of mine. Now, I don't say this to begrudge something with Ronda. I say it because if somebody is made by our sport, but they leave our sport and they don't come back, it seems to me that that would be recognized. Like, that would be recognized in some kind of fashion. And Ronda was very unique in our sport. She was the most likely to end up on Ellen DeGeneres' couch. And when I give that example, I think Ellen came off the air, but she was massive at the time. And that would be what we call mainstream for our sport that has also or always been in a niche type situation, particularly back in the 2014s. Like, it was a really big deal what Ronda could bring in, or A-level actors that show up in the arena there to see Ronda. Like, it was a big deal. And the reason I say that is that was a table that was not set by Ronda. That table was set by many people before that, and it wasn't quite as bountiful. From the guys that made 500 a night, that made their way up to 5,000 a night, that eventually got to 25,000 a night, now they are long gone and out of the industry, but the new crew that can come in, and they can expect 40,000 a night, and end up on 90,000 a night, and then their time's done, and the next crew comes in, and it's six figures, and you're complaining you got sponsorship. I'm just saying, it's a very neat thing, and Ronda has a meaningful piece within that history. But as I observe it, all of a sudden when she leaves, we don't have anybody on Ellen's couch. The point being, even when she left, even if it wasn't for her, even if it wasn't for her pay-per-views, where a participation, a financial windfall was there, she was still in a spot to do those interviews and shine up the card and pass the torch and do it for someone else. By no means would she be obligated. I'm just sharing for you that there are certain ways to go out where you can come back. You don't have to reintroduce yourself. You don't have to have somebody else talk you up and praise you and then hope that the young guys give you a hand. There's a different thing where you don't ever leave. You help, you transition. Maybe it's in a corner, maybe it's in a training role. And hey, look, there's nothing wrong, by the way, with ripping that Band-Aid off and saying that part of my life is now done. So there's not any part of an insult here to Ron. I'm just observing. I'm observing what was done by Ronda. And in large part, it was you, the fan. It was us, the fighters, that came with her, helped to spread the word, and kept that fuel under the flame so that she could go into the WWE. There was never a part where Ronda, because of, and then talk about anything she had done in her past, excluding MMA, that got her there. There was never a Ronda is now in a segment on WrestleMania with The Rock because she was an Olympic bronze medalist. Just for example, it all had to do with MMA and that type of a shine, which is where it is so important that push and pull, the return to an event, keeping the name out there, I feel would help to serve somebody. And Ronda has now come out, and she's talking about, first off, neurological damage. And this is a very sensitive stuff. This is very real. It wouldn't matter if you cheered for or against somebody. You're not dealing with a human being. You know, you don't ever wish something like that upon a human being. That is far outside of a sporting event, of which in a confined period of time, we are trying to accumulate points. And when the time runs out, we see who has more points. We're talking about something very different. It becomes There was a situation. It was an interview that did very well. Cat Williams was speaking with Shannon Sharp. And I don't know the context of it. They were talking about Kanye West, and I don't know how they got into that context. But Cat Williams, for my interpretation for this piece that I heard, I thought was defending Kanye, where people were saying that Kanye is acting in an irrational behavior. But those same people are saying that he has some type of a mental disorder. So Cat Williams' entire stance was, if somebody has a mental handicap, why would you possibly then think it's fair game to judge and or ridicule the behaviors or decisions that they made with that mental handicap? And I mean, I'm telling you what, boy, you want to talk about a stop the music moment. So if Rhonda has, and we of course would believe her that she is dealing with something neurological, as she put it, that was due to concussion, then we would stop right there with attempting to break down what it is that she said. That is where the yin and the yang comes on this, and that is why you're going to hear me talk about it. But you're going to see most people just simply staying away from it. Rhonda had made a comment that one of the reasons that she continued to fight. Now, she knows that she is the greatest fighter to have ever lived. But because of the concussion, she was having a hard time managing certain parts of the fight, such as distance and range. She was having a hard time getting to the opponent. The opponent was having an easier time getting to her. So there would be no way that you could accept both of those and speak about this topic anyway other than matter of fact. If you believe that she was compromised neurologically, you cannot then go on to judge the statements that were being made, but it sure was a cautionary tale. It was an extremely cautionary tale because Rhonda talked about the fact that she just kept fighting, but it was for the fans. She didn't need to do it. She didn't even want to do it. She had the money, she had the accomplishments, but the fans wanted her. And this was all through something the kids used to call Twitter. I think they call it X now. But it was all through a social media platform, at that time known as Twitter. That is where she got the basis that everyone wanted her to do this. That she was going to do it and get back because everybody needed that. Even though she wasn't one of the ones that needed it, she was doing it for them. And when it was all said and done, as she went out there with Amanda Nunes, those very fans who she did it for turned on her. They turned their backs and they betrayed her. And when I tell you it's a cautionary tale, I had a little bit of a legs up on this. I was 18 years old. I was at Brigham Young University, the kids call that BYU. The coach out there was Mark Schultz, legend himself, but brother, the icon, Dave Schultz. And there was a number of interviews and clippings and things that you would see, but there was a Sports Illustrated article done by Mark Schultz, and I happened to see it. It was framed. It was up on the wall. Somebody put it there, and I read it. And it just said, it's okay to read what they say about you. It's not okay to believe it. And that was it. That was the whole thing. But I would then extend that to myself. I'd really think about that quote and say, yeah, what if they're saying great things about you? You can't believe it. You start believing you're untouchable, you're invincible. That becomes a problem. You cannot believe that. You got to get in practice. You got to listen to your coaches. You got to stay hungry. You got to get better. Well, what if they're saying negative things about you? Telling you you're worthless, just for example. Well, you can't believe that. That would just pull anybody down and just be terrible. And by the way, when I saw this was in 1995, that's prior to the dot-com boom. That's prior to social media even being a phrase. It wasn't even a phrase, let alone did those kinds of things exist where if you wanted to bully somebody or you wanted to pat somebody on the back, you could do it with 160 characters or less. So it was a very different thing. And I would always assume when the greats came into it, they were above it. They didn't feel it. They knew that those complete strangers online, right? That's where it's a cautionary tale. Like, it would hurt me as Rhonda's friend, somebody that cares about Rhonda, that would hurt me to know that she was hurt by strangers, that she was reading things and she put her own value and her own self-worth to the community and to the world into the comments that were made by the strangers. I would not like that for her. I would like her to know that her actual group, her real people, the outcome of a sporting event is something to celebrate for her. If she's glad that she won, then we can all be glad that she won. If she feels as though it's time to no longer compete, then we all can feel that same way. But to find out now that it wasn't like that, that those words of strangers she thought was real, she thought that was her family and or her community. And I will tell you, there are some real tough guys out there. Ones that many of you admire, still to this day, who will have their ups and downs based on the theme of their social media. And you'll hear them, they'll say, well, everybody says it. No, everybody didn't say. Not even everybody on your Twitter feed said. You read 3 to 4 that had that kind of theme, and you put it down and didn't even continue reading on. For all we know, the next 400 were the other way, but we don't actually know, because you got your feelings hurt, you got them hurt early. When you got your feelings hurt and you get them hurt early, how many of those do you think the guy really sticks around and reads? I mean, in all fairness, how many of them do you think that he would stick around and read? How would he ever know what the common theme is? And moreover, why would it matter? It's always one of those tough ones. And I can always see through it, right? We know our own. I knew everybody out there that ever used a substance that was against the rule. We all know our own. I wouldn't say anything, but I knew. And I also know my own for the people that are the hard and fast entertainers that are doing this for a business and a job. And just like anybody else, when they leave the job site for that day, it is behind them. They wash their hands, they go home to their family, and now they are husband and now they are dad. They are not bringing that job home with them. I know the difference. And Rhonda was one of the first to come out and explain that she's just there to evoke an emotion. Whether it's good or bad, as long as there's an emotion, she's winning and she's doing her job. The one thing she does not want is for them to not care, for them to be neutral. So thank you for your emotion. And I knew when I read that, and that was about 9 years ago, but when I read that, she's not the one that can wash her hands at the end of the day and then go home and now be dad and now be husband. I knew that. I knew there was an act and I knew that it was pretend. And you're seeing this so many times. There's nothing that's wrong with it. I label it and I'm comfortable with my words and telling you it's a cautionary tale. And you can't believe one to be true, which is concussion leading to neurological effects and defects, and then give the person a hard time. You can't do them both. But I do maintain that you can step back and you can observe it. And a great way of just making sure that that never happens to you, a great way, if you can do it, would be the quote that I saw before all of this came along and one that I never forget, which is, it's always okay to read, to hear, to listen what they say about you. Just make sure, good or bad, you don't ever believe it. You guys want to know what John Jones did a really good job of? When John Jones left the belt, 205-pound belt, he puts it aside, he's going to go up to heavyweight. It was a very good story. And the story was, I have shown my dominance. So now I'm going to unlevel the playing field. I am going to spot my opponent from jump street an advantage, which is size. I am not a great big heavyweight. We have great big heavyweights. It's a reason we weigh them in. At my weight class, if there was 3 pounds of separation in the fight, would it happen? Right? John Jones had never had a fight where there was 3 pounds of separation. There legally would be able to, at 205 pounds, he could have an opponent that weighed in at 202 or 200 or 199. Don't think that I don't understand these things. I'm telling you now, he never had 3 pound advantage. He never fought an opponent that did weigh in at 202 or 199. They all weighed in at 205 or 206. Relevance being, story makes sense. Okay, fine. Well, when John started down that journey, he brought us in on it. Specifically through Instagram, but he would bring us in on it. I can think of workouts that I saw him in. I can even remember some of the gyms, some of these dirty old school gyms with the dirty plates, not all the fancy stuff. And sometimes he was using chains or white chalk all over the place. I like it. I'm into that kind of thing. You don't have to be. I'm just sharing for you. For me, it was part of the story. For me, it was part of the humbling process that John was going through to get with those coaches and to try to learn that world of size. And John had what I believe to be arbitrary number in his mind, 240 pounds. But I believe he one day just grabbed that number. So, okay, great. You got to have some kind of a number. You got to have some kind of a goal. He starts after, but now we know. So now we're along the journey. My only point, and I think those things are fun. You've seen so many compelling documentaries, magazines, books, how-tos on weight loss. So this was one with a well-known person who had a very unique purpose. And they were going the other way. They were trying to gain weight. Story was great. But either way, it was a story that he brought us on. You want to know what I don't know about John? I don't know about this injury. Pure coincidence. John had, somebody was filming the very workout, the very position when he got hurt. Great big guy, goes in for a double leg to tear to the pec. So we have that. And what I share with you is, I don't know how bad this is. I don't know when he's coming back. I don't know what to expect at all, and I wish I did. I'm looking at 300 coming up. And card coming out of Saudi Arabia. Sergey Pavlich got assigned to that card. If you guys know about that fight with Volkov, maybe it's going to happen, maybe it's not. Could be some confusion. Either way, Sergey Pavlich, at least in theory, is assigned to a card. And that's a big deal. Because Tom Aspinall, who becomes champion, is not only not getting a fight, it wasn't rumored to be getting a fight. He wasn't picking a fight. There wasn't really even a discussion. There was kind of more of a confusion. And within that confusion, and probably the largest part, is when will John be back so that we can then come up with a date when he can be in there with Stipe. If it's a reasonable date, perhaps Tom Aspinall never finds an opponent and just hangs out and waits. But this is just all part of it. It's all part of the story. And then when you start to realize Tom's not being talked to, he's not being looked at. As a matter of fact, neither is the guy that he beat in Sergey Pavlich. So we can't really scream fire or say there's anything amiss here until Sergey gets matched up, right? Like if the guy that lost can go out and get work, then the argument and the urgency for the guy that won to go out and get work changes just a little bit. And, you know, injuries are a funny thing. They really are. They really are a funny thing because you have the psychological side to it that nobody knows. Nobody is above that. It's just a part of it. I grew up wrestling practice, bunch of tough guys. Bunch of tough guys. Wrestling practice brings in tough guys. It was so hot in the room. Oh, my goodness. Roy Pittman be running practice. They'd be so hot in there that parents, all they had to do was watch. They would have to leave the room. They couldn't even watch. It was so hot in there. We're down there training for 2 hours. Tough guys. That's my only point. Bunch of tough guys. But without fail, if 30 guys started practice, 30 guys did not finish practice. Without fail. I went to practice every single day but Christmas. And yes, that includes Christmas Eve. Every single day but Christmas for 9 years. There wasn't a single practice where however many started, finished. And when you'd have some of those harder practices, then you'd have a lot more injuries. The hotter it was in there, the more work that we did, wouldn't you know, there was more guys that had to go out. And without fail, when you had those days of this group of kids, right, and you're done wrestling the second you say you are, the moment you say, I'm hurt, I can't, you are done. There is no coach that is going, you got to push your way through it. Nope, doesn't work that way. But at the end of practice, Coach Pittman would play a game. King of the Mat was a big one, if you guys know the rules to that. But we would look forward to King of the Mat. So he would play it. And every time, without fail, everyone in the room played the game. And without fail, after practice, when Coach is giving a quick talk before we go, he would point out the fact that he only played the game to see who was actually hurt. And the guys that were actually hurt, claiming they were hurt, all of them would get up, and they weren't hurt when it was time to play the game. And because I was there so often, I knew this drill, I recognized it, I could finish his thoughts, but I remember these things. And when I became a coach, I will do the same thing. The guy, he can't go on. He just can't do it. He's hurt, he's out, he's got the, he'd like to be there with his teammates, but he just can't do it. And then all of a sudden, when it's the motivation changes, injury goes away. So we've seen a little bit of this playing out right in front of us. The Prochazka shoulder injury is done. I mean, there is such a mystery within that. But the audience simply was not interested enough. They just simply were not interested in Prochazka and the shoulder and the stripping versus the relinquishment. I mean, that whole thing, it just wasn't any. And it's long gone and it's behind us. But if you wanted to sit back as somebody that was there and observed it, we have never put paid to that receipt. Never has that been stamped paid. That is an open file. Prochazka was hurt so bad. It was, and I quote, the worst injury they had ever seen to his shoulder. Stripped him. And within 1 month, he was on Instagram saying, I'm ready to fight. And pretty soon he got back in there and fought, and there was never an explanation given. And that's okay. You can mix diagnose, and you can also have miracles. You can have good treatment. There's no egg on anybody's face. I'm sharing for you, when you bring these things public, instead of keeping them private, where they should be, when you bring them public, it does become a level of interest. Jamal Hill played a pickup basketball game during International Fight Weekend as part of a spoof, part of a fun, let's go. I never really understood that, quite frankly, because a pickup basketball game where Daniel Cormier and Jamal Hill, and I could keep going, a bunch of guys that you would find very interesting are playing basketball, which is something you would never consider. That is interesting. I never even knew it happened. I was in Las Vegas. I never even knew it happened until Jamal was hurt, and it was aired on UFC Fight Pass. That's weird. If you can get a bunch of guys that cost a whole bunch of money to get on camera to do something for free just because you asked them to do it and you're going to film it and you're going to commercially do it, but you didn't tell anybody. I mean, not for nothing. I'm going down a different road. That is weird. Whoever organized that, got that approved, got everybody there, got the jersey, got them out there, but failed to let anyone know it was going to happen. I mean, that's a completely separate conversation. What I'm trying to share for you, he ends up getting hurt there. He gives his belt back. And he was not coming back. There was, you know, now he was going to come back later this year and everybody was moving on. All of a sudden, man, we're in a jam. He gets one phone call. Do you want to fight? Yeah. And that's interesting. That's interesting. Had he been cleared, had this been a matter of time, were we in the process of finding fights? Was secretly, he's been back since about Christmas and kind of kept it down, you know, keep your weight off it, but do most of the workouts. Was it one of these situations? Or was he on the bench completely because he was injured because somebody told him you can't return for a year and he still had 5 months left on the clock? Right? I mean, that's where that psychological side comes in. Those guys that were hurt at the wrestling practice, the story I told you when I was growing up, were not faking. By the way, you probably came to the conclusion that I was implying they were. They weren't. They thought they were hurt. They thought they could not go on. They really thought that. And when it was a game and it was more fun, it was a little, I think I can do that. And you know what? I'm going to give it a try. They learned something there. They weren't being outed. They learned something. There's a psychological side to these illnesses. And I'm only bringing it to, that's pretty interesting. From the worst injury we've ever had, and I'm back to Prochazka, to Brett in 1 month. In 1 month, according to him, to Jamal is not going to fight till closer to 2025. Hey, we need you and we got an opportunity here. I'm in. That's interesting. And I tie those in with John. Am I right? Like if anyone can do it, can we at least admit, right? If it can be done by a human and it's athletic and it's a physical problem, if it can be done by anyone, can we at least admit, then John could do it? Like, is there any physical thing that a human can do, but that he can't? It's one of those spots, and he wouldn't know. He'd probably be a little confused, too. But if you called him and asked him, do you want this date against this opponent? You might be surprised at the answer you get. You might be surprised that all of a sudden you're feeling better. All of a sudden, yeah, there is a way. Yes, I have learned enough about my body and what I can do to prepare and train and even compete on it. I mean, I don't think there's a situation where you're going to convince me that Chris Weidman all of a sudden is ready to go. Like, you're not really ever ready to go, but sometimes it's your turn. I used to get asked that on Fight Night all the time. Are you ready? Are you ready? That was just the thing people would ask you. Are you ready? Are you ready? It could be a stranger. It could be your own mother. It's just what they say on Fight Day. Are you ready? I am never ready. But I'm never going to be ready. At some point, my music's going to hit those speakers, and it's my turn. And I only share that because I'm curious. John did such a good job of bringing us along the weight gain journey. Whether he meant to or not, it was very fun. It's fun to see that. And I would like to be on the rehab journey. I have the foggiest idea where that's at or what he's able to do activity-wise. I know when I see him, he looks pretty good. Does not look like a guy that's sitting around. I like some of those answers. For me, it's fun. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition. My wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today. Guys, I'm really into things that add more convenience to my life. It's even better when it also comes with safety in a high-quality package. I'm talking about my Eufy Video Lock. I'm still loving this thing. I love this thing so much that I'd like to invest in the company. I am so impressed with this product that I'm willing to back it. And if anyone out there knows how I can do it, please reach out. You gotta check it out for yourself. I'll probably do a quick social post, but for now, just search UV video lock. Do it online. It's a 3-in-1 smart lock, 2K camera with an audio and doorbell. It's easy to install. It has fingerprint recognition, so I don't even have to remember a code. I can control it all in an app, which again, the convenience is such a big plus for me. We are always on the go, and being able to monitor our home on the road is such a nice option. Not only that, I don't have to rush to the door if the doorbell rings. I can either open the door or ignore whoever's at the door by vetting them through the app. There is no monthly fees for security video storage. The battery is rechargeable, and each charge lasts about 4 months. This UV lock is fantastic, and I highly recommend it. Search Eufy Video Lock online. That's Eufy, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door. All right, Sandhagen. Now, Sandhagen has been used over here as a verb, as a descriptive term for when somebody is not paying attention to their own division. Now, this is a long time ago. I do not feel as though Corey does that anymore. In fact, I thought Corey going after Chito Vera was some of Corey's finest work. Not to mention, it was a tremendous heel move because Chito had just lost. So for Corey, who's like the world's nicest guy, to come out and go after Chito in that moment, try to get himself a fight, it also kind of looked a lot like kicking a guy when he was down, which not for nothing, a heel is allowed to do. And I don't know that Corey is a heel, which is one of the reasons it made it so provocative and interesting to me. But either way, when he did this, and do you guys remember when we went after Chito? I mean, it was not just, I would like to fight Chito. It was not, oh, I really respect him and he's a top guy and maybe we could compete together. It wasn't like that at all. It was like 7 or 8 things in that direction that had the same fire, if not more, than O'Malley put on and into Chito when O'Malley had business coming up with him. It was just very interesting. The point is, I went to his wonderful website and I ordered myself a Sandhagen t-shirt because though that is behind him, the idea still lives on. And for anybody that wasn't paying attention, just so you understand where this came from, there was a time at 135 pounds when the fight to make was Aljo versus Jan for the title. For whatever reason, that wasn't being made. And not only was it not being made, they wanted, the matchmakers in the war room wanted to go with Sandhagen. They wanted to put Sandhagen against Jan. And everybody knew this except Sandhagen. So Sandhagen has a fight. He wins. And I can't recall, was that the wheel kick against Frankie Edgar? Not overly relevant to what the moment was, but it was a fight that when Sandhagen won, it really was a wow moment that you could come in and anoint somebody a number one contender because of what you just witnessed. And at any rate, they came in, I think they being Joe Rogan. And whoever was interviewing Sandhagen begins to tee him up. And Sandhagen is not aware that the screw job is about to get put on Aljo and that the title shot is about to go to him. He's not aware of any of the things that every onlooker is watching, including Aljo, who's at home, sweaty palms going, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to me. They're this close to giving it to Sandhagen, and they ask Sandhagen who should fight for the title next, of which all he has to say is me, and he says, Aljo. Yeah, he said Aljo should, but that he should get dibs on the winner after that. He had no idea what was going on in his own division, so he called him a Sandhagen. Okay. Now, that of course is in good fun. In the world of teasing or making fun of somebody, that's pretty low fodder, can we agree? But there is a message within that that you got to know what's going on. I mean, this is an ever-changing craft. It's an ever-changing field and landscape. And something that is true today, boy, it just might not be true tomorrow. Like if somebody came to you and said, hey, you have 5 wins in a row all by finish. You were fighting for the belt. Come tomorrow, you may still have 5 wins in a row. That statement is no less true tomorrow. but you're now not fighting for the belt because of something else that happened. So it just changes very quick. I feel like I shouldn't have to state that. I feel like it's wildly condescending to my audience that I would have to state something so glaringly obvious, but we do see this mistake made. For every fighter who has ever said, I'm going to sit and wait, meaning for a title shot, it's the only thing that makes sense. I will not fight with anybody else. I mean, for those folks, it is why we have to constantly remind that you got to know what's going on within your division. And you're not going to get praised, and you're not going to get headlines, and you're not going to get credit for being a masterful troll. You're going to get looked at like a fool. And I would never go after a coach. I have to state that. I view myself in the class as fighter. And though my career is long removed, I still think of myself that way. And no matter of the trash talk that some people said I used to speak, I would never be after a coach. And Clayton, my trainer, had no rules except that. He let me go to interviews. He let me go off. He let me go do my thing. And he took a lot of heat for it. He took a lot of heat for standing by me. At that time, when I was the only guy doing it, I was looked at as a very poor sport, as disrespectful in a sport of martial arts that's completely based around respect. Not for nothing. So that spilled over to him, and he had nothing to do with it. He let his guy, me, go and do what I wanted, with one exception. I do not go after a coach. And if a coach comes after me, I do not respond. If a coach has something to say, they got to say it to Clayton. If I got something I want to say to a coach, Clayton goes and says, I can only go after athletes. I mean, I'm just sharing that with you. So I want to be very good here about Lima, but it's not the first time. This is not the first time that Coach Lima, does a great job, has made this statement, which is, if Charles wins his next fight, in this case, it's against Sakarian, but it that doesn't have to be against Sakarian because he's made this statement at other times. If Charles wins, if he is somehow put in a position of getting that golden ticket, that number one contendership, meaning, right, if you can fight the champion, then by proxy, the assumption would be made that you could fight anybody else, right? If you were allowed to fight the coveted champion, you could fight the number six guy. That would be pretty easy, right? And if his student Charles Oliveira is put in said position that he is not going to use that golden ticket to take on Islam Makhachev, he would prefer to take on Conor McGregor. And it is not the first time that they've said this. I have pled with you, the audience. I have pled with you prior to October 22nd of last year, which was billed as Oliveira versus Makhachev Part 2. I pled with you. Do not count on that. Do not spread that and do not expect that. I was live on ESPN working with John Anik, and we both had a role, which was to build the UFC. And Anik had brought that up and he teed me. I'm the first one to respond. What do you think about this fight announcement? I said, I don't think the fight's going to happen. I ruined our segment. I sucked all the energy out of the room, but I had good reason to do it, which is I had a good source that fight wasn't going to happen. My source was Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira said he was not going to fight Islam specifically on October 22nd. Now, if I'm to tell the story accurately, I do have to include that part. Because for me to make believe that he's scared of Islam or just doesn't want the match, I can't quite go that far. I could have that opinion, but I can't make that statement for you. And why? Because when Charles said he wasn't going to do it, it specifically had to do with that date. In fact, he said if you would like to do it the next month in November, he would be game. So, okay, good enough, but here we are. Here we are on the heels of 300. And 300, boy, do they have the star power. 77, you guys want a great stat? Whoever went and did this work, and I think it was Andrew, but whoever went and did this work deserves such a pat on the back. This is an incredible stat. 77 main events between all the boys and girls on that card together. 77 times. There was a main eventer who's now just part of a card. But if you're standing back and you're really studying 300, it doesn't lack star power. It doesn't lack attention. It's got a beautiful date. It's got the venue. It's got the location. I mean, you're just checking boxes. But if you really understand the sport, you are going to understand it is lacking significance. There is not a wildly significant fight compared to what we're used to. So you would have such an opportunity to make yours significant. And you know what that word means, by the way? Before you get lost in the syllables and think that I'm going somewhere sophisticated and calculated, it just means, what's on it, Hoss? What is on this fight? Is it a retirement if a guy loses? Is it a number one contendership if a guy wins? Where do we go from here? And whoever has a bigger leap has the most significant fight. It's not rocket science. It's just missing. So this would have been a great time to insert it's a number one contenders match. This would be a great time to study your division and know that the promoter is likely to come out and want to name it a number one contenders match just for the allure. And there would be cold water thrown all over that if you get in front of that announcement by saying that's not what we want. I don't know of a time in history, if it's happened, fine, but I don't know of it, and I'm pretty good at this, where somebody got a fight that they didn't want, where somebody got an opportunity going forward that they didn't want. Now, they get them all the time going backwards. All the time, I don't want to fight number 8, I'm ranked number 3. Well, you're going to fight number 8. All the time that happens, but not forward, not a promotion. I've never seen it. Never seen somebody get a title shot, right? I mean, those are fought after. Those are coveted. Gaethje's going to be going for it that night if he wins. Max Holloway has now, as early as this morning, thrown his hat into the ring that if he beats Gaethje, he wants a number one contendership. So it's very difficult for a promoter to come in and promote you if you've already got in front of it and said that you don't want it. And it's not the first time that this has happened, specifically with Oliveira. We were told this could have been kept secret. This could have been taken to the grave. There was no cameras. There was no reinforcement. There was no backup. We were offered by Team Oliveira that the night that Oliveira and Islam got done and went in the locker room, the UFC came to the locker room and right there on the spot offered the rematch. We never needed to know that. We never should have known that. We know that from their side, and we know that from their side. As great as they are, as talented they are, and as much as you might like them, they pulled a bit of a sand. All right, let's take a look at 155 pounds, okay? This is a very interesting situation because we have two feature matches on the same card. You are not going to be able to sell on the smart marks that Oliveira versus Sakarian is the feature of those matches, that that's the number one contendership. If that was the feature of the match, then it would be higher up on the card. Do you understand the significance here? You cannot tell me that one is a feature match, which is where a number one contender would come from. The guy that's going to fight for the belt, the greatest prize that anybody can be given, is a world title fight drawing you, in this case, into Islam. You cannot convince anybody that your feature match is earlier on the card. It's a very big deal. You don't get to bring in, well, it's the BMF title. You don't get, stop. I'll hear all of those arguments as long as you're conceding the other is the premier fight. And you must understand it from this standpoint, because if those guys go out and do what they should do, which is to call for the title fight, the argument in who should get the nod really doesn't come down to an X's and O's or even statements that were made at a press conference leading into this. The time to submit who in your mind is the more premier fight has already been done. That is when you put them in the same weight class on the same card. Who did you put on closer to the top? It's already been identified. So we don't get to run it back now is what I'm trying to share for you. It's like when A and B go fight, you can argue all you want until the fight happens. Now we have our answer. We have our resolution. And I'm just taking a good look at that, and I'm trying to figure it out. Like, look, a big reason that you can't, of course, lose work because I can't think of another one, right? You can't name Oliveira Sakarian a number one contenders fight. A big reason why you can't do that is Oliveira's already made it clear he didn't want to fight Islam. So just imagine a scenario where Oliveira and Sakarian fight. Oliveira wins. You come in the ring, you start interviewing, right? The moment one fight ends, the marketing for the next begins. And let's say everybody's on board and they kick it off and they throw it to Oliveira and he says, I want McGregor. Just imagine that happens. It's not a scenario, whoa, he said Connor, and let's give him a big standing O, and hey, this was your night. I mean, after all, it was your night. Then you're going to go in the back, and you're going to say, yeah, he's going to go and fight Islam. I go, well, he doesn't want to fight Islam. We can't run that back. We just did that. So, okay, great. Oliveira doesn't win. Sakarian wins. So, are you going to get Islam to play ball? I mean, one thing about Islam is when he's asked to do something, he does go and do it. It's not a situation of where I'm predicting that Islam is going to refuse, but Islam's also been pretty busy on social media. And he's made it pretty clear that he would like some fresh blood for one. That's where Poirier and Gaethje become so relevant. That's where Max is given such an opportunity. Somebody fresh, a new matchup and a new idea. Islam has been very consistent that that is what he wants. And you take it from there. You pick who it is. Harder style, easier style, wherever that goes. He's made it clear that he would like somebody new. Okay, well, then you're going to have a little bit more difficult of a time. Of why are these 35-plus-year-olds getting title shots, considering none of them have ever won? I mean, there's just hard and fast numbers out there, and I don't have them for you off the top of my head, but I do remember when Volkanovski was going into the fight with Ilya Topuria. I do remember this being discussed, and there had only been one person, 35 and or over, under the weight class of 170, like it had happened with the 85-pounders, the 205, Randy Couture did it up at heavyweight, but with those smaller guys, like there is something about those numbers, where Gaethje and Poirier, like they're always a good idea, but they're just not specifically what you want. Well, that's where Max comes in. That's where Max Holloway is that fresh and newness, not to mention how red hot, tip of everybody's tongue he will be if he can get the jump on Justin Gaethje, which he is not favored to do. And Max, while being a veteran, go look at his age, he's a very young guy. I mean, Max Holloway seems to check all of the boxes with a win over Gaethje. Now, if Gaethje gets the win, Gaethje is in a very unique situation where Gaethje has been trying to get a title fight. And Gaethje got the title fight and he ended the argument and the discussion in one sentence. And he'd said all sorts of sentences. He's had pages, he'd had fights and training camp. He'd done everything you could possibly do and couldn't get a title fight. He made one statement and the music stopped and he said, you do not knock out Dustin Poirier and not fight for the belt. And that's when everybody, he's right. And so, therefore, he is fighting for the belt. His own, the BMF, which has never had a lineage and has never been defended. It's about to have a lineage and it's about to be defended because Gaethje made such a wonderful statement and argument. And you're not going to be sliding Gaethje. You're not going to be not honoring your number one contender, the hard work and the hard efforts, by not giving him Islam if you continue the lineage and you continue to defend the BMF. And it's a very big gamble. I mean, what I'm suggesting for you is a very big gamble. You do not want to waste that airtime. If you get a win, you're standing in that octagon with Joe Rogan. There is no amount of media that you can do that will make up for that moment. Talk about target audience. You got them right here, right now. What is your message going to be? And you got to plan these things with very good strategy. I don't know where Oliveira is going to go, but I don't have to. As long as the decision makers know they don't know where Oliveira is going to go, you're not going to name that the number one contendership. Now, Sakarian's got a great argument. It loosens when people find out he already fought Islam. I don't want to give Sakarian a hard time. He's doing everything right. I don't want to do anything to take away from his motivation. What I'm talking about is if you get everybody to play ball except for Islam, right? I mean, then that becomes the one where you got to strengthen it up. So if you go out, you do everything right, the bosses are leaning your way, and then you get a Gaethje or Max, and they come over the top. I mean, it's just a spot where you could count on everything with Islam. You could count on him saying your name and everything coming to agreeance and him wanting the absolute hardest fight. You could do that, or you can remember, there's another title here. Our division, 155, is in a very unique spot because we have another title. We just don't have clarity on it. We don't know if there's going to be an ongoing lineage with the BMF or not. But there's a good chance that there is, considering it's being defended for the first time ever. On a premier card, which at least in theory is supposed to be the biggest of all time, and all of the media and all of the attention is going towards that match, which is going to show some decision makers that the BMF is a pretty effective tool that people do in fact care about. And that leverage is where you begin to not need the blessing of Islam, and all of a sudden Islam needs you. Where you as a top guy getting a big win on the focal point, instead of going to Islam where he can swat you down over social media or not, is whether you go for him or not. And it's a risky move that has to be made. But I think there should be some consideration given by the guys, by Sakara and by Oliveira. And it really wouldn't matter if Gaethje was the winner or Max was the winner. If you can keep a lineage and a history going for the BMF title and you can align yourself to be next, particularly understanding that the BMF himself is going to be up in 40 minutes to double down and reinforce your statement or to knock it away. I think it's a gamble that you should at least, with your strategic team, consider. Answer me this, okay? Go down this road. What is stronger within you, you personally? Now, the topic is regret, but here's the two scenarios. Some time passes, you look back. You regret that you did not do something that you knew needed to be done. And it would be really easy to apply to either school or to sport, either one. Whether it was studying more for a test or in the world of sport, say you had a run. Right, you had to get up and run for whatever your sport was. And you knew you would be better, but you hated running so much you didn't do it. Just for an example. So the regret of not doing something you knew you needed to do versus the regret, as you look back, the regret of not knowing you should have done something. Do you understand the difference? You look back, go, oh my, how did I not know that running would have helped that? How did I not know that getting in a study group would have helped that? Because I'm that one. If I was just personalized, that's the one I am. Looking back going, how did I not know that? It's so obvious. Or I wish somebody would have told me. And I'm looking at Max. I'm looking at Max Holloway, and I'm wondering if he's making a mistake. He would not be able to know. He wouldn't be able to answer that question for me. Now, he could 10 years from now, but that's how regret works, right? That's how regret works. You look back and Max is nearly perfect. It'd be a really hard thing to do to study from the moments competing to all of the years leading into the competition. So now I'm talking about lifestyle. It'd be very hard to look at what Max does on a daily basis and point to something that if he did different, you would project he'd have a better moment while competing. It'd be hard. That's where I say he's perfect. Nearly, right? But there's always something. There's always something that can get in your way. Now hold the Max thought. I want to back up to an example. Volkanovski versus Islam. Volkanovski versus Islam, part one, had a number of things on it that part two did not. And the way that that story will be told, part two versus part one, the way that story will be told is the difference in competitiveness and the difference in performance. The match that was known as part two, the match versus part one, the difference was the short notice of Volkanovski, and that is it, and we are done and turn the page. But it's not accurate. That is not accurate. There was a number of things that part one had and offered that part two did not. None of which are larger than the fact that Volk had no pressure in part one. None. It was a different level of expectation. He was a 3-1 underdog, for example. He was moving up, and Islam was the heir apparent, anointed by King Khabib himself. Stopped Oliveira easily, who had been running through everybody like a hot butter through knife. There you got this smaller guy, found himself an opportunity, and got to go get this out of the way. It's a little annoying for Islam. He's not going to get a ton of credit. He beats this guy, right? If he loses to the guy, he loses the world championship. If he beats the guy, he gets nothing. And the guy had a world championship. It wasn't on the line, right? It was one of these things. And that wasn't prevalent in fight two. There was an expectation. We now do have an understanding. The idea that Volk has no chance is gone. Volk is a dog. I can't wait to see part two. And it was just a different scenario. And I would suggest for you in part one, when I talk about no pressure, or when you hear the word pressure, you automatically connect that with something negative. Automatically. Well, who's got the pressure? And then if you can identify, if you can clearly identify who's got the pressure, that's a knock against him. And that is a gross misunderstanding. Now, pressure does matter, and I'm not saying it's always your friend. I'm not saying it's always helpful. That's what some jerk would say to sell a book on Amazon, as though he's got the secret answer, and pressure is so great, and here's how you use it in your favor. It's not quite like that, but I can remember Volk speaking about this, that if he beat Islam and won that belt, that he was going to go back to 45, and he was going to take over there. I believe at that time it was between Yair Rodriguez and Josh Emmett. But, you know, you guys get that sorted out and Volk will be back. And then you 55-pounders, keep your eyes open because Volk's coming. And Volk's real consistent. He's real consistent with his idea that he likes to be consistent. Like, if anybody would have done their best, the UFC wouldn't have given him the fights. But if anybody would have done it, had they been able to get the fights, he would have kept a full schedule and defended both of those. I understand all those things. But the other side, and that's the cool part, right? But what's the other part? The other part is, regardless of outcome, he already has his next fight lined up in his own mind, and he had told us, which was the winner of Islam versus, I apologize, the winner of Yair Rodriguez versus Josh Emmett. He was letting 45 know, I'm not leaving you. I am still the king, and I'm coming home. You guys have some business to take care of. I'm not holding anything up. You get that taken care of, and in a very timely fashion, as though I had never even come up to 155, I will be defending. It was great. He was trying to do all the things, but what's the byproduct? The byproduct is, what a soft landing. We talk about that word pressure. And he found himself in a situation that had removed all pressure. And no, unlike the jerk that tries to sell you a book on Amazon by telling you how great it can be, I'm not doing that, but I will tell you, the removal of all pressure isn't any better. And I say that to you because, as close as Volkan Islam part one was, as close as it was, I maintain for you to this day, had Volk vacated, had he given 45 back, there was no outcome of Yair or Emmett. There was no look, there was no focus. It was all in on 55 or nothing. I win tonight. My next fight is a world title fight because I'm bringing it. I don't win tonight. My next fight is not a world title fight. And I just maintain for you, that idea of burning his ships was the one thing that was missing in part one. And the reason I give you that example, when Max is talking about Gaethje, I mean, don't forget, Max has 2 forays at 155 pounds, just to remind you. The first of which was scrapped by the New York State Athletic Commission 24 hours before the bout. He wasn't even able to weigh in. So that was one opportunity. One opportunity of a signed bout agreement at 155 pounds, a license, arriving, a marketing plan, the whole bit, was to have no fight at all. And the next one was opposite Poirier. There was 5 rounds and Poirier won all 5 rounds. Was it the size? Was it the style of the fight? Was it a better fighter? I mean, these are all things that are open for discussion. But what I am attempting to prove is 55 has not been overly fruitful for Max. So what is going to be different this time? I don't ask you that in a challenging way. I challenge you with that ask, because if you take the time to answer it, you'll find out, hey, he can do great here. I understand those things too. But I am hearing from Max how much he wants to go to 45, how much he wants to get a win here, get that good attention, and return to 45. When Max very first started saying it, and see, and one of the reasons I want to change that is I think that we would all get that. If you're a competitive guy at 45, you got a problem with Volkanovski, you drop it. You don't just go run somewhere else, right? It's one of those things where, no. I'll stand here number two, but I will stand here before I run up here to be number one. It's an ego and it's an internal thing. And it's not necessarily how you're going to be remembered and looked at by society, but there's something within you. It's a very common thing amongst athletes. Now, the reason I tell you that is when Max first started saying that, Volk was on top. Max was not armed with the information that running away as a way of getting away from Volk is no longer the situation, that just isn't possible. I've never lost to, I've never competed with, I don't have any heat with Ilya Topuria. He can go on and have his life, and I can go on and have mine, 155 pounds, and when we both look back, there's no regret. And I'm only sharing for you, maybe Max has changed his mind. Maybe 145 wasn't this magical number that he just had in his head at night, and that's the cool place to be. I think it had to do with Volkanovski. I think. And if I'm right, okay, great. There's still an opportunity to move on. But you're going to need everything that you got to beat Justin Gaethje. And Justin, while having pressure of it being his weight class, largely is in a much more ideal position, of which Max can meet head on. He can be in that same position. He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to beat anybody. It's a statement. It's a statement that he has to make. He makes a statement. He puts it what they call the universe. It comes back to him. And I'm only sharing. He wakes up each day thinking, well, I'm the little guy and I'm going up. Little guy and I'm going up. But I'm gonna give it hell up here. And I really think I can do it. It's subconscious. But if you're planning to go back down, you're looking for title fights down there, you're planning to call those guys out. You're calling guys out, not planning to stay, not planning to defend, not planning to defend the BMF at 155, not planning to use the BMF to get a number one contendership to go back to Islam. You're not planning to do anything with it. Even if it's subconscious, is a layer of subconsciousness that's telling you, I don't plan to win. Michael Bisping was breaking down the pending fight, Chimaev and Whitaker. You know, that is a massive fight. By the way, I mean, I got to tell you, like, fights that pop off the page, we're on the eaves of 300, right? Supposed to be the biggest fight card of all time. Supposed to be. And I'll be very curious what that live gate is. I'd be curious right now if there's any tickets still available. My guess is there are not. But every now and then, the UFC will sell tiered. They'll have multiple tiers so that they can hold them out, just so any of you that get to the party late or don't get the newsletters or aren't part of fan club can still have some level of opportunity. So there could still be some seats, only because they haven't been opened. I share that with you. I was blown away at the live gate of 291. Or 299. 299, O'Malley versus Cheeto, for reference, $14 million gate. 14 and change. Unbelievable. I used to have the live gate record, and we were at 7.9 million. That was the absolute record. And it was a huge thrill to have that and to get that. 14.1, and I don't think you guys even knew that. I don't think that's been celebrated anywhere. I know it's been commented on. I know that information is out there, but I don't know that that was headline worthy, and you take it and you highlight it with the yellow marker. And so now I'm looking at 300 and going, well, what's that gate going to be? Just how high can that be? And put in perspective for you guys, when Eddie Alvarez and Conor McGregor fought, that was a champ-champ situation, one of the great storylines. It was the debut for the UFC in New York. You can't redo those things, right? You can't re-get that kind of an atmosphere. They did a $17-plus million gate. So for $14 million to come in at $299, a card in Miami that almost by mistake turned out to be one of your guys' most anticipated and favorite cards. I'm just curious about 300. And I bring all of that to you because with all of the great fights that we have, of the ones that are announced, there is something where I'm finding more people discussing Chimaev versus Whitaker. And there's so many things at play there. The greatest feud that we've ever seen, even though we only had it for 11 days, was Adesanya Duplessis. That was so hot, it was melting airwaves, and people didn't want to touch it. People didn't know where landmines or tricks were. You have a black man from Africa. You have a white man from Africa, both of which are claiming they are the true African. This had brought everybody's eyes, everybody closed their mouth, everybody ears open, and they just didn't know what to do with it. They just didn't know. They got uncomfortable. And I'm sharing that with you because if that gets revived, there's going to be something very exciting to look forward to. And people do want that revived, but how do we get there? Which, again, is why it is important that we got the Whitaker-Chimaev announcement. You start taking those pieces off the board, just by process of elimination, you start to see, okay, this Duplessis and Izzy business is getting closer and closer. But it also does make you wonder what happens with Strickland. There was discussion of Strickland being able to go right in for a championship. There is a mandate of the masses, which is you guys, that said the fight that you most prefer to see. And you love the idea of Izzy Duplessis. You loved it. But you preferred, you loved even more Strickland back in there with Duplessis. I will tell you that surprised me. But either way, when we come to this kind of conclusion, and we're not in such a hurry, right? We're not up against it time-wise. Like 300 felt like, hey, it's kind of a rush. And it's not just the fights that we want or even the fights that are most appropriate. It's also who can make this date. But now that those things are removed, you can exhale a little bit and you can start to go with absolutely anybody that you want. Strickland is feeling left out. And can we all agree that Strickland is in the conversation on a short list, and it's got to be a very short list, for guys that could go and fight for the title right now, for number one contender? Can we all agree, as the former champion who competed ever so close to the point that many say controversial, can we agree that he is one of those guys? Great. You may not give him the nod. That's okay. But if, as long as we can agree that he's on that short list, then if he doesn't get the nod, is he next? So one of those situations where we got to have a cue. You might remember Leon was going to fight Colby. But Blahal was a great option too. So we're going to go Leon, Colby. Blahal gets to sit. Blahal will then take on the winner. Is it a situation like that for Sean Strickland? And nobody said that it was. Is it a backup situation where Sean might be able to go in? Nobody said that he was. And it would seem as though if we get along this journey, if you're still on board, if you haven't outright disagreed with anything that I just said, then it would seem as though, right, if he can't get the title, then we're to the next best thing, which is he gets dibs on it. To the next best thing, which is he's the backup fighter. To the next best thing, that he finds himself in a number one contenders match. We're now three steps down and we haven't heard Sean's name. I mean, that is one of the bigger things about Whitaker versus Chimaev. Sean himself, who is a student of the sport, is able to look back, see that, and go, huh. Hard for me to imagine that being a five-round main event on ABC doesn't get a little something lit underneath it. Hard for me to imagine that the winner of this fight is not going to be recognized in a more proper way. Where do I fit in? What do I got to do? What are my options? What are my opportunities? When is my next match? I mean, in all fairness, this is what had Strickland putting his hands up. And I wonder if you guys agree with that. Do you agree that Sean isn't in the title hunt? He's not in backup position. He's not even in the number one contenders match. And then there is a question, well, where is he? And where does he go? Now, these things always have a way of working themselves out and really fast. Right? Anytime somebody ever says, well, it just doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. The only thing that makes sense. Anytime they use a phrase like that, they are speaking to the options that they have thought of, which means they're limited to their own creativity. So whatever the plan is with Sean, we just haven't been revealed that yet. I'm letting you know where this came from. And Michael Bisping spoke on this. And he was talking about Whitaker versus Chimaev. And Michael was even a little further ahead. He started to get into the X's and O's. And he started to talk about, you know, you got these two great fighters. He was praising them both. And he made the statement, but obviously, Chimaev gasses out. And to say that Chimaev gasses is a fair observation. You could even point to the Gilbert Burns fight where he was exhausted, or you could point to the Kamaru Usman fight where he was exhausted. But it was the way that Michael said, obviously, he gasses out. Where I'm going, wait a minute, is this something that's known through the industry? Like, is that what people believe about Chimaev? That you can get him tired? Because, one, that would surprise me. I didn't know that people viewed him that way. And if that is an accurate assumption, that he's one of these guys that gets tired, then championship rounds, particularly against somebody like Robert Whittaker, who can stay out there and he'll fight you all night long, that could become problematic. But the longest fights that Chimaev had, which are 15 rounds, which are broken into rounds of 5 minutes, which would mean the third round is the last round. A guy that gets tired by concept, where you think there's something within the blueprint to beat him, would be fatiguing in the third round. But if we're going to go look at the Kamaru Usman fight, or we were going to look at the Gilbert Burns fight, Chimaev won the third round. So I don't know if that's a fair assessment. Now, Michael Bisping knows what he's looking at, and I don't find myself watching something and Michael watching and us coming to different opinions very often. But I also believe every fighter should be absolutely exhausted when that fight is over. Even if it's 6 minutes and it's a stoppage, I feel he should be absolutely exhausted. I feel you should take whatever it is you have and you leave it in there. What would you be holding it for? If you're in a three-round fight and there is no fourth round, why would you be saving energy for the fourth round? I mean, I only suggest that because the guy that gets tired, the guy that we talk about for getting tired, there's another step. It's not just that he's tired. When we talk about him, what it means is that he fatigues, he quits fighting as hard, and there's an opportunity to beat him. Exhaustion makes a coward out of all men. It is a great intangible. If you can get your opponent so tired that he wilts. And generally, anybody that we say gets tired or gets exhausted, it's because they have that other ingredient, which is that they wilt. I haven't seen that with Chimaev, and I was surprised when Michael identified it. I think that somebody might be making a mistake if within their game plan, they believe I can put a pressure on him and get him to back down. I do believe you can get him tired like all human beings. I do believe that that pressure is very wise, especially in a sport like mixed martial arts. Can you put a wise pressure on him and make him relinquish, make his will and his spirit go away? That I have not yet seen. I was working for a company called Fox. Fox is so instrumental in your ever telling the story of MMA and getting it mainstream and getting people to know what it is, and Fox bringing them in is, at that point, the biggest turning point for our sport as an industry. They started a show called UFC Tonight, and I was hosting that with Kenny Florian, and it was a very good level of participation in our sport. It was the only show on TV about MMA, aside from the fights themselves. So it was great fun and a great opportunity. And Fox asks me, I get asked about this. I had called Wanderlei Silva a dumb immigrant. And this wasn't a situation where there was about to be a disciplinary action. It was just brought up and asked about. Now, that could have gone in a number of directions, and I suppose we'll never know. So this was written, and I was called out by a guy named Jesse Holland. And I, by the way, this is not a beat the dog session. I don't have a problem with Jesse Holland. I'm sharing the story with you. So I said, I work for Fox. Like, you know, these are dot-coms, and the things that were happening on the dot-coms back then, you really never called them out. we didn't have anything known as a journalist back then. And that would be the great, right? If you're reading things and you're getting information, that would be like the highest category would be a journalist. There's ethics involved, and there's schooling and training, and there's things that you, to fall into that category by somebody reputable and to be called a journalist. But then you would have reporters, and then you'd have writers, you know, kind of working your way down. But we didn't have any of that with an MMA, right? Most of the people that were talking about MMA, even the people that we counted on, like I was a fighter, I've got a message, I have got to get it out. And whether I want to tease the guys about running dot-coms from their mother's basement or not, that doesn't do me any good. This is still our industry. These are still the words. These are still the guys that print those words. So like it or not, like everybody is working together. But I did find Jesse, and I did contact Jesse, and I did let him know, hey, I'm at Fox, like this dot-com world of doing whatever we want, the Wild West. I can't totally play in that anymore. I've upgraded just a notch, but there's a behavior that has to be a little bit different than the dot-coms. And he wasn't flinching. He did not see it that way. He didn't care in the least that he put this out. That he put out with me that I had called Vanderlei Silva a dumb immigrant. And the problem with it, and the reason I contacted Jesse, and the reason I asked him to stop, and see, now here's where he starts getting rude. The messages back are very short, and they're also very defiant. That he has done nothing wrong and tough for me, and he will continue to do as such if he wants. You know, it was one of these situations where what I need right now is a conversation, and I don't need anything else, but I need that internally. I'm in L.A. I had just left the studio. I'm back at the hotel. He's giving me very short responses, and they're very rude. And no, we're going to have this conversation, Jesse, you and I, no matter what it takes. We'll have it in court if we have to, but we're going to have the conversation. The problem that I have, so you guys know, spoiler alert, I never said it. That was my entire problem. Him coming out in headlines and saying Chael Sonnen calls Vanderlei Silva a dumb immigrant, in quotations. My problem with that is I did not say it. So, have you ever heard me back down from anything I've said? Ever? I will go down before I back down. And this is on a dot-com, and it's already old news, but it's a situation where if we're going to use this as a trajectory for the future, Jesse was very busy. He was typing all sorts of pieces. He was either at Bloody Elbow or he was at MMA Mania. Frankly, I don't know which he's with, but those are the only two dirt sheets that I go to. So everything that I get is either from Elbow or Mania. And I share this with you. He brings his editor in. So now we're on a three-way discussion with the editor. Now, there again, we just need to have a conversation. That's all Chael's looking for. I don't need an apology. I damn sure don't need a retraction. I don't need nice print in the future. I just need it to be known that this did not happen. And Jesse, with his editor involved, editor lets me know, yes, it did happen. Now, I know the entire time where this came from, but I just keep saying it didn't happen as a way to get them to produce where it happened. So the editor, ultimately, when the whole thing is done, takes Jesse's side after admitting on this conference call that it never happened. There was an interview where I used the word immigrant. There was a completely subsequently other interview, a 2 months separated in time, where I called him dumb. And the editor took Jesse's side. He admitted that it didn't happen, but I did say them both. I did say dumb, and I had said immigrant. So for him to quote and say, he did do it. I did do it. And it was just a baffling thing for me. Like, I didn't need him scolded or fired. I didn't need anything on this. Yeah, I guess I was working fast there. And I heard that interview. I heard this interview. And yeah, put them together. Right? It was just weird. It was just a weird thing to do. Okay. So I'm reading an interview from Ian Garry last night. And Ian Garry refers to Colby Covington as Colby Wimpington. Now, Ian Garry is what I consider clever. To a degree, he would practice these things. He would rehearse them. He would think about them. And then he can come out with a level of performance and deliver them. He's a very good performer for our space, which is filled with very untalented people. Not for nothing, Gary's towards the top. Colby Wimpington, of all the things that have been said and all the things that Colby has said, Wimpington, I don't think that Gary said it. It's as simple as that. Now, when I see Wimpington and I see the quote that Ian Gary called him Wimpington, it jumps off the page of me. I don't think he said it. That doesn't sound right. And this is before I scroll back up and see who the author of the article was. So I'm sure, like many things, Jesse has already decided that Chael has attacked him. And Chael's cooking him, and Chael's even coming out to slander him. Nah, I haven't done any of them yet. As a matter of fact, we can clear this up. Ian Gary either said it or he didn't. If he did, then this is the first PR piece where any of you have ever heard the name Jesse Holland. And he can thank me. And I most certainly would stand down and correct the story, unlike what he did for me, if it happened. If it didn't happen, then maybe we do turn it into a bit of a whip the dog session, because it wouldn't be the first time that Jesse made something up. So it's a bit of a challenge. I'm offering it. There is zero part of Jesse Holland who would not love some attention. So if he did do it, supply that he did it, we'll come back, get you more attention. That seems reasonable to me. But I went to the actual interview and heard Ian Gary speak. By God, I didn't hear him say Wimpington. So I went to it another time. Right, I got other things to do, and ADD kicks in. It could easily have happened, and I somewhere missed it. I didn't hear it the second time. So I sent it to a friend of mine that's a little better than school than most and is a doctor, and just asked him if he would spend the time and listen to it. He also did not hear it. So did Jesse Holland make up? Because the whole rest of the article is what Ian Gary said. He's just right. There's no skill in dictation. This is called dictation. This is not called work. It's called dictation. He got all the dictation right. But I don't know where Wimpington came from. And if it was there, I would like clarity. That's all I'm asking for. When did Ian Gary refer to Colby Covington as Colby Wimpington? And if he didn't do it, why on earth would it be included in quotations? And why on earth would the claim that he said it be? It doesn't add anything. It's not clever. You don't help him. It doesn't sell any tickets. It doesn't get headlines. There's nothing about Colby Wimpington where a reasonable person could be in the slightest bit motivated to add it. But perhaps he didn't. Perhaps I missed it. So now is your opportunity, Jesse Holland. Yes or no? Did Ian Gary say Colby Wimpington? All right, everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind you all that if you want to support the program, and why wouldn't you? Then I ask that you head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and do me one favor. Hit the follow button. It helps way more than you might know. Enjoy the fights this weekend, everyone. And come back next Tuesday for a deeper dive into UFC 300. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.